Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Can't get enough of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to listen to the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to have you here with us. First part of June. A lot of kids home from school and all that stuff now. Summer feels like it's kicking in. Anyway, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We come to you each week. We talk about financial matters during the week. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, helping them plan for their financial future. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you work with today or not, we want you to consider us another source of information. And anyway, glad you're here. We've been doing this program for 23 years.
And you can call the show and get your questions answered?
Yeah, you can be anonymous if you'd like.
Be anyone you want.
Yeah. We are name neutral.
Yes.
1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. If you've got a question regarding your retirement, wondering when you could afford to retire or how to generate the best retirement income or how to structure your portfolio in retirement, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
Or you could email us a question at questions@moneymatters.com.
Yeah.
questions@moneymatters.com. And while you're there, go ahead and sign up for our weekly podcast at HansonMcLean.com.
So, yeah. So enough. Before we go to the calls, we've been seeing more of life insurance being pitched as an investment than we had in the last few years.
In fact, being sold as an investment, not just pitched. People are buying it.
Well, they must be buying it because you see the pitches over and over.
Yes. As an alternative to your 401k or IRA.
Yeah, and there's one particular company that seems to make it seem like it's bad. The problem with your 401k is the tax, all the tax laws in the future. It's going to get, your taxes are going to get hammered there. And then I don't know what they say about Roths.
Yes.
Is Roth, because the argument of, if you think the tax rates are going up, then use a Roth 401k.
There's nothing wrong with that counters the argument that. So here's the premise, yes, that they are selling these life insurance as an investment.
Yes.
Is the idea being is that there are some components of life insurance policy that are tax favored.
Yes,
I'm going to give you that. There is absolutely that the dollars you put in your life insurance policy grow tax deferred and they can come out tax free if you die with the policy in place.
Yes.
Which means you put $100,000 in, it grows and grows and grows. And the idea being is, look, you can take your $100,000 back out, withdraw your principal. There's no taxation on that.
What the bank at yourself, on yourself? Is that what they're talking about?
That's the whole thing.
You're borrowing from yourself.
You're borrowing from yourself. So you take your principal and then you can borrow money from your policy. And as long as the policy is in place at your death, it's a good thing. And the argument is it's better than an IRA and a 401k.
The tax benefits a life insurance policy, most of the time, it's tax-free upon death. The whole death benefit is. And any of the money you've taken out through a loan is basically forgiven.
The problem with it, and those are all given. Those are true. The problem with it is it ignores the cost associated with the life insurance policy itself. If there were no costs associated, or alternative investments other than life insurance. But if there was no cost associated with having the life insurance policy,
we'd be huge fans.
We'd be massive fans. But these life insurance policies are not free. They pay big commissions to the selling agent or broker. Big commissions to the selling
oftentimes
agent.
Oftentimes, 50% or more of the first-year planned premium.
They have
50% of the first-year premium.
They have large surrender charges on them.
15, 20 years, 25 years.
Which means that if you take the money out prior to that 15-year period.
Roughly a half of all these policies are canceled within the first 3 years. So most half the people never, all they do is pay a bunch of charges.
So, and the cost of insurance internally, which is very, very expensive, as well as servicing fees in these policies. So while the argument sounds.
And your your financial advisors. Objectives and yours, there's not a very good alignment there. The alignment is to sell you a big fat insurance policy. Then instead of helping you with your financial plan in year two through and on, it's find someone else to sell a big fat life insurance policy because they get paid a big upfront commission.
So we're anti these. We think that for most people, if you have a need for life insurance, term insurance.
Well, we were talking before, it's like, why do people buy these? And I think part of it is, I think many people buy this as a, they say, I'm going to go with this kind of, I'm not going to put money in my 401k. I'm going to put my money in a life insurance policy. I think a lot of these people are ones that maybe aren't doing well in their own savings. And maybe they think the system's kind of rigged against them. That's how they're pitched anyway.
Yeah. Like, don't do it the old fashioned way.
Yeah. And I think maybe people
it's
aren't
not
having
your parents' retirement. I've heard that.
Yeah. And so they think, well, maybe this is some new way to try. Instead of banking on myself, that sounds great. Instead of, I'm not doing very well with Wall Street. I'm not doing very well with getting my home paid off. But if I can bank on myself, I like that. That resonates well with me. Maybe that's part of it.
Like they're just going to try a brand new,
I don't
because
know.
They lack the discipline to do it the right way? I don't know. All I know is that the aftermath we see from these things are not pretty.
No, that's exactly right.
It's not pretty.
No, we see people put money in 3, 4, 5 years. It's like now they don't have anything in their Roth. They don't have anything in their 401k.
Yeah, when that the tried and true ways work perfectly fine if you do it.
And there's no guarantee that the tax policy is not going to change in the future for those either.
Oh, and the life insurance policies, that's correct.
Couldn't you see a change there? I certainly could see a change there.
Well, I would. So beware. If someone comes selling you life insurance as an investment, as a new way to save for retirement, please.
99% of the time, it's a bad idea. Every once in a while, permanent life insurance can make some sense. But it's so misused that the world would be better off if they didn't exist, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, have a question for us. 1-888-2-HANSON is our contact number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's start in Northern California with Liz. Liz, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Liz.
Hi. Okay, my question for you is, we aren't retired, but we should be retired. So
shouldn't we all?
Yeah. Well, we
should
really
emotionally
should be,
or should financially?
I joke. I have no desire to retire. My marriage is not that strong.
Okay. Well, I do have a desire. My husband, on the other hand, likes to work, I guess.
Okay.
Anyways, most of our retirement is in real estate. We have a number of rentals, and it gives us good income. And I didn't know if there's a downside to having everything in real estate. We do have enough money to buy another house, and I don't know whether we should do that or not.
Well, I think I mean, if you went to Economics 101, which says have diversification, right? If you're going to be in real estate, diversify your real estate holdings by both type and geography. So all those things. So the easy answer from a financial planner would be, well, Liz, you want to make sure you're diversified, blah, blah, blah. Having said all those things.
It's what you know.
And it's how you've built up your net worth, my guess, is through your real estate investing. Over the years?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do have a SEP with quite a little money in it.
What's quite a little money?
Well, it's not much, but it's enough to contribute to another house. It's about $350, and then we probably have $250 in cash in the bank. So we could do that.
And how much?
And I don't know what's in our SEP. My husband takes care of that. I know there are some stocks.
I would highly discourage using a retirement plan to buy real estate.
That
I know there's
correct.
Out there people that say get a self-directed IRA, and you could use the money to do so. But the problem is a couple things. One, real estate has some great tax benefits, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you have it in a SEP IRA or an IRA, a self-directed IRA, you lose those tax benefits.
The second thing is when you go to do a required minimum distribution.
At age 70 and a half.
It creates a nightmare scenario, which is
how do you value
beyond
real
belief,
estate?
Beyond belief.
Okay. We would not do that because he is already over 70 and a half. And I'm assuming, I think, that we can take that money out if we want. The problem is just you have to pay a lot of taxes,
right? Yeah, which is that you wouldn't want to pull it off.
How much real estate do you own? What's the dollar amount?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
$2 million?
Maybe $1 million.
Okay. $1 million.
We have six of them that are rentals.
Got it.
Total value is only $1 million of six rentals?
I don't
You're
know.
Not living in... You,
I do live in Stockton. Yes. Keep that in mind.
Okay. So let's call it a million two. Do you have any debt on those?
No.
All right. There isn't a chance in the world that I would recommend that you buy any more real estate, just from a diversification standpoint.
Not only that, it's not going to make your It's not going to make your life any better.
But Scott, imagine this. Liz, you come into my office. You've never met me before. You come into my office. You have approximately $1.5 million. And I say, hey, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take 3/4 of your money and buy all of this real estate, all in the same town, all at the same time. And then the rest we're going to invest differently. You'd look at me and you'd say, what are you talking about? Why would I do that? That is against every principle we know about financial planning and asset allocation and diversification in order to mitigate risk. So you call financial advisors and ask them, should I double down on what I already own? That's what you asked. And the answer is no. Now, if you said, hey, I want to sell some of these and buy some property in Denver or
I love real estate. How can I reduce my risk?
I would have you do some tax-free exchanges into different geographies.
But then it requires more work.
And I most certainly wouldn't be adding to that position at this point in time.
Done an exchange at one point to add another property to it. It's such good regular income.
The other money
doesn't really give us anything.
But Liz, how could you say that? I mean, how could you say that? If it was properly,
what it looked like 10 years ago.
If it was properly diversified in the dollars, if we were managing those dollars, I don't think you would be saying that if we had been managing the same amount of time that we've been managing the real estate. So I own real estate. I have dollars invested both in real estate and in portfolios of stocks and bonds and other things. But it's not a horse race. And you look at it, the rates of return over time, the equities without leverage, equities have outperformed real estate over a long period of time. That's just a fact.
So when you call and say all you have is real estate in one particular geography,
so the reality is the dollars that you have, you need that. I wouldn't buy any more real estate. I would actually make sure that they were invested properly, right? And when you look at income, when you go into retirement, there's three things you're interested in when your portfolio. It's capital gains, interest, and dividends. That's what you're interested in, and that's total return. So some people say, well, how much income does it derive? How much income does Apple pay out as a dividend? Has that been a poor investment? I would say not.
No, but right, and I don't own Apple.
I understand, but in a well-diversified portfolio, you would own Apple as well as many other companies. If you bought the S&P 500, you would own some of the greatest companies in the world, and it wouldn't generate much income, but over time, the capital appreciation, which allows you to sell a little bit every time. It's not like a house when you have
you
a portfolio.
Very passionate about this, Pat.
Well,
it's like almost angry.
Am I angry? I was getting into it.
I know.
In a little preacher mode.
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend you.
I don't know what happened. I apologize.
I think a lot of it really, a lot of it comes down to what you're comfortable with. Because
but, Scott.
How could she? Let me ask you this.
You
Pat,
guys are funny.
How could, let's say she went and bought another rental tomorrow.
Okay.
How's that going to, other than the fact it's going to take some more work because there's yet one more door you got to make sure is rented out and one more sink that's going to get clogged. Other than those issues, how is this going to, how would this make her life horrible?
It wouldn't make it horrible, but she called and asked, should I take my money in a retirement plan and put more money into it?
Although you have a major earthquake.
Yeah.
Or a major fire.
Or.
I mean, that's the one problem with geography.
Or stock that goes into bankruptcy again and never comes out.
No. Say it ain't so.
Right? I mean, there isn't any part of me that could say that that's a good idea to buy more rentals.
I'll be darned.
No part of me.
So, but you're not saying there's a downside to having rental income, right?
No, not at all.
You could have a great retirement.
In that direction.
You could for many.
But if you're going to do it, we wouldn't buy it in the same town as everyone, all the other ones.
And I wouldn't buy any more real estate. No.
Who was it that Robert Kawasaki or whatever his name is? He said within 50 miles. Don't go outside of any further than 50 miles.
Where did he make his money? Selling books and speaking.
True.
Come on.
That's true.
He was all gung-ho in the real estate market
until
the financial crisis came along. No, you know how many people lost everything following his strategy?
But the 50 miles things. Anyway.
Our focus lives is your retirement stage, right? When someone's accumulated money, when they're in their 20s or 30s or 40s, they can afford to take leverage. They can afford to take risks. If things don't work out, they've got more time on their side. When we're at a point where we're at retirement stage, for most people, they're more concerned about maintaining their lifestyle, protecting what they've got. For most people, that's more important. And so the vast majority
of where I am.
And that's how we view the world, and that's typically the advice that we bestow on people.
I wouldn't add any more to that asset class that you already own.
Yeah. Anyway, Liz, it was fun talk with you, and hope this helps somewhat or just made your life more confusing. I'm not sure which it did.
But okay.
Anyway, thanks.
Okay.
We wish you well. And
was I getting angry there?
No, you weren't angry. You're just passionate about it.
Scott. So very rarely do I find myself speechless. All the time. We can't go wrong in real estate. Are you out of your mind? You can't go wrong. You can go wrong in any investment.
Yeah. Well, think about if you owned three homes in a community in Santa Rosa, Northern California, that got burned down by the fire.
Yes. Right. But the asset allocation, risk mitigation, especially when you are in retirement or close to it, risk mitigation. Right? You're more interested in not being poor than you are in being rich.
Most people.
Yes. And adding more to an asset class that has already appreciated beyond belief in the same geography just makes no sense to me. So there we go. I'm not going to discuss this. My wife says we're not going to talk about this anymore.
I have a feeling you don't say that to her so often.
No. Right. I said it was my wife.
Yeah,
says.
Right. I couldn't imagine telling my wife. We're not having this discussion anymore.
Big one cold night. And let's continue with calls here at Hanson McLean. Again, if you want to be part of our show, 1-888-2-HANSON is our contact number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Denver, Colorado, and talk with Susan. Susan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, I had a question. We bought a house as an investment, and wanted to flip it.
Okay.
And we just wondered what the tax, if we could avoid taxes, or it's not the house we live in. It's an opportunity that came up.
And what'd you pay for it?
$375,000.
And what are you going to sell it for?
Maybe $5,000.
And did you put additional dollars in? Did you do some fix-ups?
Nope.
Wow.
Okay.
Good for you.
And we weren't.
Do you want to buy another investment property?
Well, that's the problem. Not really.
Okay.
Okay. Then pay the taxes and be happy.
Pay the taxes and be happy. Move on.
Okay.
Really. So what you can do, to avoid the taxes, you could do a 1031 exchange. 1035, I always get the ones and the fives mixed up. One's for insurance.
1031.
1031 exchange from this property to another property. I've done it in the past. It's a, personally, it's a way to avoid taxes, but it's only if you're going to buy another investment property and you got to invest at least that much or more. Otherwise, you've got some taxable stuff. And I certainly have seen enough people a decade ago at the top of the market didn't want to pay the taxes and exchanged only to see the exchange thing they went into decline in value by more than they would have paid in taxes.
Yeah, you had a great return on this thing. You're going to pay ordinary income taxes on it since you owned it less.
And I do other tax planning you can to try to see, you know, other can you be max money put in your 401k? Can you guys max out those things this year? But I'd figure that stuff out after the thing closed escrow, or if it once you were in escrow and it looks like we're marching to close.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Appreciate all right.
It. Yeah. Well, congrats. It doesn't always work that way. So congrats.
Yeah.
It's an interesting real estate market.
It almost feels like I've seen this movie before.
Yeah. In some markets particularly.
Yes. In some markets. Denver being one of them.
Denver's one.
There's a large influx of people.
Well, I saw an article a few weeks ago. The Bay Area, it showed the median home prices. There was multiple counties where it was over $1 million for the median home price. Yeah. And I'm like, how does the next generation...
They don't. For some of the big companies, Google and Facebook, they're building their own homes.
Yeah. Doesn't work. The numbers don't work.
Yeah, they're building places. It's back to the company town. Now the company's Google. It's not Westinghouse or United Steel.
And they know exactly what you need when you need it too. That's the thing. Strange would that be, right? Of any company to live in their own.
Google.
They already follow me. They know everything about me.
Yeah,
you know,
they know where I've been.
My map guess where I want to go.
They do.
I know. It's kind of strange. And we're going to talk with Dennis. Dennis, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hello, Dennis.
How you doing?
We're doing fantastic. How are you doing, sir?
Fine. My question is about Social Security.
Okay.
I am 68 years old. I retired from education at 62 with my pension coming from SDRS.
Okay. Which is, for the rest of the listeners, that's the state teacher retirement system.
Correct. I have paid into Social Security over my lifetime, so I have more than my 40 quarters in the system. But my benefits from Social Security are means tested because my SDRS windfall elimination provision falls into play.
That's right.
WEP, yep.
I started taking my reduced Social Security at 65, but I have been working in another field since my retirement at 62 and have been paying into Social Security ever since.
Right.
And that amounts to about $3,500 a year. My question is, will my benefit from Social Security be adjusted when I take myself completely out of the workforce?
It should be adjusted each year currently.
Yes. And I think, do they still have that provision where you can pay back your Social Security benefit? Do they still have that? They don't have that.
No.
It was eliminated.
That's correct.
Okay. I love the fact that they called this.
I'm 99% sure on that, by the way.
I'm not 100% certain.
Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Which is the windfall for those teachers that retire, that they actually have the courtesy of calling it the windfall elimination provision. The windfall.
Like you won the lottery.
No.
That's an insult. Isn't it insulting?
The windfall. You're like, wow, Dennis.
It could be
good job on the windfall. Yeah. So your Social Security benefit should have been adjusted every year based upon those deposits. Is it not?
Has it not gone up at all? Of course, they keep increasing Medicare Part B. So they give you a little bit more on the Social Security and take it away in Medicare B premiums.
Yes, because they automatically deduct my Medicare for my Plan F, the gap, from my Social Security payment. So I really don't see it. So, yeah.
Just because I question myself on this, I would check to see if they used to have a provision where you could buy.
Why would he want to do that? He didn't.
It might make sense for him. Do you need the income?
I'm 99% sure you can't buy it back.
All right.
Anymore.
Scott's right.
All right.
Okay.
Anything else, Dennis?
All right.
But appreciate the call.
Glad you called. Look, we're a little tight on time for another call right now. So let's. We have to take a break here in a minute. But I want to let all you listeners know, we've got some great tutorials on our website. We've really positioned our learning library at Hanson McLean to have a variety of things there. And our tutorials tend to be, you know, little shorter things. We might have, for example, a 30-minute version of our workshop.
The seven personal decision points for retirement transition.
Or Social Security.
Short, easy to understand.
Yeah, and we have a variety of other
white papers, blogs, that sort of thing. But the point being is that we believe that an educated investor is a good investor. We believe that.
The more educated you are,
the better you'll do. The better you'll do as an investor. So
at least that way you know the questions to ask. If you plan on having an advisor take care of all this, like a lot of people do, particularly wealthy people retirement, it's still good to know what questions to ask.
Yes.
And how to know if someone's pitching you something that's not good for you.
Yeah.
We're big on people getting educated.
So if you come to our website, hansonmclean.com, and look at the education programs that are available.
Absolutely. It's a lot of good stuff there. We're taking a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us on, assuming you're with us, because every week we have more people subscribe to our podcast. So you might be listening to us
on podcast.
On terrestrial radio, but you might be listening to us via podcast. And I believe we have more listeners now through our podcast format than we do via radio, which is an interesting thing.
What's happening in the, so I have four children under the age of 22. They would no sooner think of,
they don't listen to the radio.
They listen to podcasts.
At all.
Yeah. In fact, my daughter, I walked in and.
Whether it's podcasts or all the music, they don't.
Walked in the other night and my daughter was doing the dishes and listening.
Well, that's always a benefit right there.
And listening to a podcast, and it was about the Trump investigations going on. And I asked her, I said, are you following all this? And she said, oh yeah, I do my best to follow it. I thought that was great.
So your daughter doing the dishes. So my daughter likes to tease me often because it was one summer when she was home from college and she was with us and I was made it pretty clear that she had to have her dishes done.
Okay.
And I came home and the dishes aren't done and she's running out late for work and she had a bit of an attitude and I lost it.
Uh-huh.
And I tend to be one that can hold my tongue pretty well. I lost it this day and I told her to do your effing dishes.
Wow.
Or you're no longer welcome in my home.
And?
The dishes were done. Uh-huh. But ever since then, so.
Oh, does she says it?
She'll tease me. So the other night, she's home for the summer. The other night, she was helping me with some dishes and do your effing dishes. She loves to throw it back at me. And I said, like, honey.
That was a long time ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
It was a long time ago.
A year ago.
In an Irish family?
I'm like, you know, I'm human. I you brought me to the point of, that's what happened.
It's you, daughter, not me.
I mean, okay, I grant you, I probably shouldn't have swore at you, but. You should have done your effing dishes. It would have been a problem.
Scott, this is a radio show here. Family show.
Everyone out there who has teenagers
knows exactly.
I try not to use words.
If you have a teenager or had teenagers or hope to have a teenager.
All right, let's go to the calls here instead of talking about our college-age daughters. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's go to Los Angeles, talk with Craig. Craig, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Good. How you doing, Craig?
Good. Got a quick question for you. I'm planning on retiring in about 12 to 15 years. And what I'm doing now is I'm trying to pay off my mortgage at an accelerated rate. I'm scheduled to pay off my mortgage in about 4 years.
Okay.
I met with a financial advisor a couple weeks ago who told me not to do that, to get a 30-year fixed mortgage, take the money I'm saving on the mortgage payment.
And let me guess, buy a life insurance policy.
No, but you're close. Go heavy on my 457, my 401k plans.
Okay. How old are you?
Hello?
How old are you?
How old are you?
I'm 55.
Oh.
And you said you're going to retire when?
Well, I'm within 12 to 15 years. So.
And how much do you owe on the mortgage?
Right now, it's about $200,000.
And how many years do you have with the state?
I have 4 years left on the mortgage to pay it off.
So do you work for the state of California or municipality?
I work for the state of California, so I do get CalPERS.
How many years do you have with the state?
18 years.
Are you a safety worker?
Well, I work for the state bar, so I'm an investigator.
So are you under their law enforcement pension plan, the 3 at 50, or?
No, it's a 457 plan.
No, but your defined benefit pension plan, your monthly
right.
pension. Is it 2 yeah. at 50, 2% at 55, or is it 3 at 50?
It's 2.5 at 55.
Okay. All right. So, you know what? I kind of...
Is that what that is across the state now, 2.5?
It just depends on... Yeah. It's all over the board, but it goes between 2 and 3.
Are you contributing now to your 401k or 457?
Yes, I am. But I was told to max it out.
Well, how much are you contributing now?
It's about $150 every paycheck. That's 26 paychecks. But I can go up to $400.
Oh, you can
every
go.
Paycheck.
You can go a lot more than that.
Well, I heard it's only $18,500.
No.
Because you're over 50, number one. Number two, you can contribute to both the 401k and the 457.
Yeah. So you could
go 45 grand a year, roughly.
Yeah. So the numbers that if the advisor didn't, first of all, if you're the person you were getting the advice didn't.
How much do you have in savings now? 401k, IRAs?
It's about 130. My 401k or my 457. My wife has the one with the 401k, and she's got about $70,000.
And what's your annual income, ballpark, your family?
Both of us are close to $200,000.
And you're going to be in the same house indefinitely? Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, exactly.
So here's what I would do. What's the interest rate on the mortgage?
My current mortgage is 2.999.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he told you to refinance it into a 30-year mortgage?
And a 30-year fixed.
Oh, are you in a fixed-rate mortgage now?
Well, I'm in a fixed-rate mortgage now, right now, yeah.
Well, how many years are you in the? How many years do you have left on the mortgage if you just made the regular payments?
I'm an accelerated payment.
I know, but if you made regular payments,
regular payments would be, I would imagine, 7 years.
Okay.
To pay it off.
Got it. Don't refinance. Absolutely, do not refinance. That interest rate is unbelievable.
It's only good for 7 years.
Right.
No, but. But amortize it over 7 years and then push up the 457 and 401k contributions.
Yeah, rather than split the difference, I'm with Pat 100%. So if this rate's good for 7 years, instead of trying to accelerate it over 4 years, accelerate it over 7 years. And because you're how old again today?
55.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I would do is I would amortize it over 7 years, not 4 years. So... If you go to
the money you're saving,
then push that into your 457 plan.
Actually, do about 50% more than that because you're going to get a tax break when you put the money in. So every $100 that you are not going towards the mortgage, I'd put $150 into your 457.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do it over 7 years.
I got to ask a question. I keep hearing the tapping in the back. Are you in like Santa's?
No, you know where I'm at? I'm at a bus station where I'm with the train.
Oh, God. Because I hear the tapping. Yeah. It sounds like Santa's workshop. People are building.
No.
Santa's workshop.
I'm in LA. I'm in Los Angeles. Santa doesn't exist out here.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
And you want to retire there?
Okay.
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah, so here's what you want to do, Craig.
Are you serious about that, though? You said you want to retire somewhere else?
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, okay. All right. I'm just trying to set things up financially.
Here's what you want to do.
I love the idea of a home paid off.
Amortize it over 7 years. Make the payment so it's paid off in 7 years. Put as much as you possibly can into your 457 and or 401k.
Yep.
So you're not even close to the limits on your 401k or 457. Not even touching it.
Okay, because I do have, because they said that I, by 457, I can only get 18.5, but they also have over 50.
Ketchup. Yeah, yes, ketchup.
Right. Ketchup, right.
And you can contribute both to your 457 and 401k at the same time.
Okay.
It's not right, one or the other. You can do both.
Okay, so I can do the 457 ketchup, adds more money there.
Yes.
Correct. And the 401k.
And you can do the 401k.
To the maximum right. as well. And use all the right. ketchup there. So that isn't
okay.
that isn't the problem. The we could shelter a large portion of your income. That isn't the problem. The problem is how much does it make sense for you to shelter? So reamortize that loan over 7 years, make those payments, take all that difference that you were prepaying and put it against your 457 plan. Do not
take the difference okay. multiply by 150%. So 50% more than that, because that's the kind of tax you're going to receive roughly 30 cents. Every dollar you put in, you're going to save 30 cents on taxes. So you take $100 you weren't planning putting against your mortgage principal, and you put that in your 401k, you're going to have a net extra cash in your pocket because of the tax savings. I don't want to see that extra cash go in your pocket. I want it to go back in your 401k.
Got it?
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And do all not right. refinance that mortgage. That was terrible advice.
All right. All right.
And just
fair
flat
enough.
Out terrible advice. But it was good okay. advice that he didn't offer you life insurance. That is oftentimes what we're seeing
well,
right now.
Actually, he did say, because we both have life insurance policies, and they're at $250,000 for both of us, or one, each of us. He said you want to max out on that up to $1 million.
And do you have kids in the house?
Well, yeah, but they're pretty much grown. You know? My son's going to be leaving. He'll be in the military in a couple months. My daughter will probably be out in a couple years.
Okay, and so and you have term insurance.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that $750,000 to $1 million in term insurance wouldn't
really
be, yeah
okay.
it wouldn't you know a 5-year, 7-year level term. Scott, you're giving
yeah
me
no I'm thinking the same thing because I'm thinking what happens if you died today? What would be the result then
yeah.
of your pension?
So
my wife. Well, okay. Yes, my wife would get the $250,000 as well as. And yeah. I'm only at maybe a third of my pension.
That's exactly
right.
Correct.
Yeah.
So okay. Buy yourself and your wife
just some cheap term insurance.
Yeah, 5, 7, 10 year level term, $750,000 to $1 million, and buy
okay.
that. If you
you'll need less insurance as you get older. So even if it was a couple
That's
different
true.
Policies, just price it out whatever you can get the best yeah. thing. Just go online and get a cheap place.
Yep. All right.
Don't get it too late because you start okay. going late in your late 60s and 70s is going to get expensive.
All right. Actually,
okay,
all in all, that the advisor, I would give him or her a solid B on
yeah.
the advice. That wasn't, okay. it was truly, it wasn't.
And someone can make an argument right. why, someone could truly make an argument. But you want your home paid off by the time you retire, and you're 55 years old
well,
now.
See, that's the thing is I want my, I mean, even if I were to go, let's say, a 15-year
yeah.
fixed,
but,
I could yeah, pay I it off in 12 years if I increase the payments, which I'm doing now.
Yeah, yeah but.
And I turn that.
But Craig, the interest rate is sub 3%. The interest rate is sub 3%.
You're
not going to get that. You're not even going to get close to that.
No. And continuing with calls, if you want to be part of our program, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-242-6766.
You got to slow down a little.
If you'd like to be part of the program.
888-242-6766.
Let's talk with Pete. Pete, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, I have a question about preferred stocks.
Okay.
Can you give me the ABCs about preferred stocks?
Sure.
Yeah.
Is there also a way to invest in them in a conservative, moderate, or aggressive style?
Yeah, let's answer that first question, the first part of the question first. And we used to get more questions about preferred
stocks.
You
know, actually, almost I can't remember.
They've lost their, they're not as popular as they used to be. So a company, let's kind of take a step back and say, a company raises capital, raises money through a couple of different ways. One is by bringing in, let's just say partners, for example, equity partners. And a publicly traded company does this by issuing stock. So if you own stock in a company, you are part owner of that company, right? And as a part owner of that company, you can share in any profits that are left, if there's any profits, after all the bills are taken care of, right? Another way a company will raise money is by borrowing money. They'll go to banks and borrow money, or they'll issue bonds. And bonds are just another way to borrow money. And if you buy a company's bonds, you are essentially loaning them money in return for an interest and a guaranteed payment at the end of a term. And as a someone who loans the money to the company, you are entitled to receive your money back before the shareholders have a chance at any of the profits. Right? Now, a preferred stock is a special type of vehicle where it's preferred doesn't necessarily mean better. What it means is it's kind of a hybrid between the bond where you're loaning money and the stock where you're an owner.
And what it means is you're preferred above a common stockholder. That's what it means. Your preferred, your dividend is going to be paid. Oftentimes, if they miss a dividend payment, it will be even in arrears before they will pay a dividend to the common stockholder.
So it's almost a hybrid. And typically, the preferred stock price is not going to be driven by the profits of the company. It's based upon where interest rates are.
So if interest rates go up, you oftentimes will see a preferred stock's value drop.
That's great. Even if the company's doing well.
So.
Your question, they tend to chart their own course, but preferred stocks can move lock, stop, and barrel as far as the way they swing, and it has, they're very interest rate sensitive. So if interest rates skyrocket the next few years, you could own a preferred stock in a great company and see the value of that preferred stock decline. So if you're going to own preferred stocks, I would have it a small piece of one's portfolio and certainly wouldn't build an entire portfolio just on preferred stocks.
And what are you trying to achieve? What brought your attention to the preferred stocks?
I went to some financial advisors just to get some information, and they mentioned both fixed income preferred stocks.
And how much of the portfolio in these preferred stocks, did they say?
No. It was a meet and greet at a...
At a hotel or...?
No, at one of the big discount brokerage firm's office.
Okay. So their financial advice, a discount brokerage firm's job, frankly, is to get transactions. and they also might have their own inventory of preferred stocks.
And were they talking about selling you individual preferred stocks or a mutual fund of preferred stocks?
No, they weren't trying to push anything. Like I said, it was a meet and greet.
Okay, got it. All right.
So, I mean, yeah, it can make sense for a portion of an income. But if you think about it, so you're in California. Think about the largest pension plan in the world, California PERS, CalPERS, Public Employee Retirement System, managed over $300 billion. So their job is to provide monthly checks to retirees. But they certainly don't have their entire portfolio in preferred stocks. If preferred stocks is the best way to generate income for retirement, they would have it all in preferred stocks. Obviously, they don't. It's highly diversified. They've got some common stocks. They have some S&P 500 index holdings, for example.
They have bonds. They have international
real estate,
stocks.
A little bit of everything. Highly diversified.
So
that's a similar approach. I think people should be looking at it, their retirement income as well. How do others do it? It's not by saying, I'm going to find the one particular security that works best and put everything in that. It's really having a broad strategy, realizing that there's seasons where preferred stocks look fantastic. The yields are high. The prices continue to go up. But there's also seasons where prices can go down on preferreds. And if you've got everything in one type of security, whether it's preferred stocks or convertible bonds or any sort of kind of a esoteric type investment like that, I think you can run into some problems there. All right?
As far as stocks, I'm pretty diversified. I've got about 30 plus or minus different companies.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to add a preferred stock or two to your portfolio, it's not going to hurt. But they don't act quite the same your stocks do.
Right. And next year I plan on retiring, so the income I was looking at.
But if your whole focus is on income, let's say your whole focus is on income, and you owned Apple stock years ago, you'd say, oh, I'm now a retirement income. I better sell all my Apple. Probably not, right?
You can create income by selling a stock. If you buy a stock and it goes up by 50% and you need income, you don't have to sell all those stocks. You can sell some of the stocks in order to create income.
And by having a portfolio with 30 stocks, I'm imagining there's probably quite a few that have some capital gain. I would I would not make a wholesale change in your portfolio just because you moved from work into retirement.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there's a strategy here because the capital gain implications, one of your strategies might be, you know, which stocks do you start paring back on in order to generate that income you're looking for.
And these dollars are outside of an IRA, is that correct?
Most of it is in IRA.
Oh, in an IRA. Okay, well, you got a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't start with the product in mind. Start with figuring out what the problem is and then looking for a solution.
Well, that's kind of what he did. I think he's looking for retirement income.
Understand, but with a single... Yeah. Someone's pitching you a product.
Go talk with three different or four different financial advisors. I mean, if you're willing to... Go talk to four or five people.
And do not buy an indexed annuity or a non-traded
and
REIT.
Just get information.
Yeah.
I mean, you sound like you're someone who actually enjoys the research part. You don't build a portfolio of 30 stocks because you don't like this stuff and because you have no knowledge on it. You obviously have some knowledge on these things. You're trying to educate yourself, which is why you went there, why you're calling here, which is, I think is great. I would go talk to four or five people and say, here's my portfolio. Here's, I'm planning on retiring. What would you do for me? And just going through that process, you're going to get lots of different information, lots of different answers. And you might say, I don't need any of these advisors. I like a little bit what this guy said. I like a little bit what she said. I'm going to do the things on my own. Or you might say, you know, I kind of like this particular person's strategy. But I just think that would be a process of getting some good information and a good education for yourself.
Pretty much I do everything on my own. And they did a printout of what I've done for the last 1 year, 3 year, 5 years.
I'm not talking about past returns. I'm talking about you're looking at how am I supposed to change my how do I want to make sure my portfolio is structured so I have retirement income? That's what you're looking at now, right? You've been accumulating these assets. You're planning on retiring a year from now. Now you're thinking out. All right, I knew how to build this wealth. Now I'm trying to figure out how do I have this wealth generate income. So our advice is go talk to whatever, three financial advisors, five financial advisors, whatever, and say, here's my situation. Here's what I'm trying to accomplish. What would you recommend? I'm not saying go hire these people. You might choose to. You might choose to continue on your own, but you've done it on your own. I'm just saying that's probably the best way for you to get information based upon your specific, because you can read blogs or books, but you've got a specific portfolio with, you've got a certain background, a certain education that you're not going to, going to some blog's not going to give you the answer. I really think your best bet would be to talk to a few different advisors and just kind of get their take on things. So I appreciate the call, Pete. Well, let's turn now. This is the time of our program that we do, I don't know, every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Where we talk real advice.
And what's that mean, Scott?
Our real advice segment is where we talk to one of our financial advisors and hear about something that they've been involved with a client, what kind of client issue they had and how it was resolved. Keep in mind that this client experience is unique to them, and you would have a different experience, maybe good, maybe not good.
But we're gonna assume it's gonna be good. But
you'd have a good experience.
In sake of disclosure, and that the law requires it, we have to inform you.
Yeah. So we've got Steve Burnett,
which is just silly.
What?
That the regulators believe that the people aren't smart enough to realize that every situation is different, and we have to tell them.
We're not allowed to have client endorsements, is what it is.
I understand. We have to tell people, oh, we think we're the best, and we think you'll have a great experience, but you can judge for yourself. Yeah.
So Steve Burnett is president of Hanson McLane. Steve's been with Hanson McLane for 21 years, certified financial planner, certified fund specialist. Steve, welcome to Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
Good day, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Steve. Glad you are. Glad you're with us here. So tell us about a situation you were with the client and kind of what retirement stage they were in and how you assisted them.
Sure. This is a typical thing that we strive for. A person came into our office with a goal of possibly wanting to retire in the next 5 years, but when she came into the office, she was really distraught. She had never met with a planner before, and she was absolutely miserable at her work environment. Bad change in management, wasn't thrilled at all with the tasks and the responsibilities that they were being asked to do, so she was in a very bad place. So she was coming in saying, literally, in tears, I want to leave this place now. Mm. And it's hard, because it is an emotional time, and she obviously wanted to stay and work, but not just in her current place. So we went through our entire analysis, our seven personal decision points. We sat down and took a look at what's the feasibility of her being able to leave now and what that would look like financially.
Yeah. And how old was she?
She was just turning 60.
Okay.
Yeah. So she had a goal of working till 65, but just not being miserable that entire time.
Yeah. Right? So hated her job. Yeah.
Yeah. Hated her job. So we went through the entire analysis and unfortunately, we confirmed her fears with if she were to leave the workforce now, it wasn't going to be feasible. There was a very high likelihood that she would not outlive her assets, that she would be, you know, in great financial trouble over the next 10, 15 years. So I had to tell her that.
Which is not what she wanted to hear. She wanted to hear the panacea that everything was going to be fine and that she could leave work tomorrow, right?
That's what she wanted,
yeah. That's exactly what she wanted to hear. Yeah, she wanted to hear that she could leave the next day and not even show up into the office would have been ideal. But when we come to that conclusion, the next question is, can we map out a plan to get us where she needed to be with her and her family? And so we did. We put together a plan, started looking at all income sources, started looking at which debts that she currently had that we can maybe eliminate over this time frame to make, you know, work more of an option as opposed to an obligation. And we found out that as she got closer and became eligible for Social Security at 62, it was much more feasible with that additional income. And also, by the time she hit age 65, her Social Security continued to increase. We would have more time to pay off more and more debt. So there would be less monthly obligations on money going out. And if she could make it to 65, she would be an outstanding financial
shape. It's amazing, isn't it? How different just 5 years, that window. It can make a big difference.
And so did she stay on the job? Did she get a new job? Where did you guys land?
We talked about that. We talked about staying on the job. We actually talked about interdepartmental transfers to try and get away from the problem she was having. And when she left, she said she was going to stick it out and hopefully try to get to 62, but with the goal in her mind of getting to 65 and she would get through it and just, bear down, because she knew financially she didn't want to deal with a problem 10, 15 years down the road that we can solve in the next five.
And I assumed you reallocated her company 401k and kind of cleaned things up and then gave her a plan that she's going to work with, right? That's how it ended?
Exactly.
Well, hey, Steve, we are short on time. Appreciate you taking time to be part of our program today and sharing that story with us.
Thanks for being a Hanson.
And we're out of time, so join us next week, the same station, or get our podcast. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.